Welcome to Battle Ready, where we sit down with leaders who didn't inherit opportunity, but they built it. I'm your host, Ricky Chavez. Today's guest, unbelievable, understands resilience. He fast guards, he resets government housing, and does all kinds of great things for our city. I'm here with Rick Figueroa. Rick, welcome.
Good to see you.
You know, we had an amazing opportunity last time when we sat down and talked. And you're the CEO of Patron Partners, right?
Correct.
And it's wealth. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I've been in the wealth business for about 30 years. I cut my teeth at Merrill Lynch, and it's always been amazing to see the transformation. There's been three revolutions in wealth management. People don't understand that wealth management is probably the greatest ministry in business because you speak truth to power. You speak truth to people who have means and how to keep them bearings into something significant versus just successful. So the first revolution was in 99 when E-Trade came on board. We were a transactional business. It was all transactional. And the E-Trade came and that blew that up. And then 2008, the world changed again. The Emeralds and the Jewels of Wall Street, Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, Goldman, they found out that they weren't bulletproof, that there was a lot of slop that was being done and they had to get reset. I believe AI is going to be the third revolution. And the difference between evolution and revolution is this. In revolutions, people get shocked. Revolutions, something changes. There's a new dynamic. It's a new paradigm. And so wealth management is going through that right now. And I think that for me, it's never about the money. It's about the impact.
You know, and I love that because, you know, as we talked before, you know, I do real estate and I have a team. And I always tell them, don't chase money. Take care of people. You got that same mindset, right? It's all about taking care of people, right?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
No, I'm being these.
No, I was just, the greatest treasure on this planet is people. And because it's the one thing that is truly genuine in a sense, once you be able to make the impact. I can't change a gold bar. A gold bar is a gold bar. A dollar is a dollar. But the people that you can impact with that gold bar, right? Our mission statement at the wealth management firm is bring your wealth to life with peace and purpose. And I say that because the saddest thing on the planet is a man or woman with all the money in the world, but no peace or purpose.
You know, I think if anybody watches our shows, even our last show when we were together, I think one of the biggest challenges people have out there is doing something and having goals, but no purpose. How can you achieve goals if you don't have a purpose, right?
Well, I think the first thing is to recalibrate your mind. The first step to establishing purpose is, what is truth? I tell people one of the greatest lies ever told to the human body is this, my truth. There's no such thing as my truth. There's the truth and your opinion. That's it. And you might not like these truths. You know, the truth is I get up every morning, I look at this fat guy in my bathroom mirror. I'm like, you know, who is this guy? When did he come? When did he show up, right? I mean, 100%. What happened to the young guy?
Right.
Well, it's the truth, right? And I can punch the mirror or get a mirror that makes me look, you know, warped, but it would be delusional. And I think the society is selling warped mirrors. And we have to say, no, we want a true mirror, a true reflection. And so one of the establishments of getting a purpose in your life is to understand what is true. What do I know about myself? What's honest? What's reflective? And one of the things that we do in wealth management is we hold up a mirror. I don't tell people something. I just hold a mirror. And I say, this is what you look like. If you don't like it, change what's in the mirror. Don't change the mirror. Change what's in the mirror. And so establishing that and then finding the heart language. Everybody has a heart language. I have a heart language for inner city kids. We mentioned I grew up in government housing.
That's right.
Right? I always tell when we have 100 inner city kids come out to the ranch and we talk to them about Christ and about morals and what it means to be purposeful. And I always tell them, I said, look, the difference between you and me is I was faster. And the cop could only arrest one of us at a time.
No, 100%.
And you know that story, man. 100%. And your buddy's not going to rat you out. But I have this affinity to them. I have a purpose towards them because it's who I am. It's very familiar. It's like when I walk into I've been to River Oaks Country Club, play golf. I can do, but when I walk into a cantina or a restaurant with a menudo and it's a little warm and it's familiar to me.
Right.
It's warm. It's like a blanket.
I think one of the beautiful things about since I've known you, it's never forget where you came from. Right. And that's a beautiful thing. And it shows some of the young people that they can also get out of where they're at, right? Obviously, you did. You were the youngest of eight, right?
Yes, sir.
And I want to remember your mom's rules, man.
Yeah, seven rules. Seven rules. You remember, right?
Well, I want to remember.
You give them to you?
Yeah, come on.
Okay, number one, right? Get your butt out of bed and go to work. Number two is you don't expect anybody to help you. Number three, you help everybody you possibly can. Number four, you pray every day. Number five, you find a godly woman, you marry, you don't live with her, you don't get her pregnant, you marry her, and then you establish a family. Number six, you honor God. I mean, you raise godly kids. And number seven, you honor God in everything you do. That was from a sixth grade education woman who washed dishes for 32 years in a hospital kitchen in Bay City.
And those impacted me. I remember those really strong from our last show. And I was like, man, I want to remember them. I know that we're going to get with our station, make sure that it's under our show, because I think those are amazing rules to live by. And just to even start, because, you know, you do a lot of great things with the kids in the area. But one of the things that we brought you here to talk about was talk about your wealth management, your organization. Tell me about what your organization does.
So there's three principles at our organization. I knew in 2000, when COVID hit, wealth management was going to change. And AI was going to take over a lot of our mission, what, you know, ChatGPT, I knew that was coming. So to build a portfolio, AI could have done that for us. And to build a financial plan, AI can do that for you. And to refer attorneys or CPAs, AI can do that. So what do you, you know, that's what I usually do for clients. So what are you paying me for? What AI can't do is, one, be relational.
Emotional connection.
And exactly. And reflect. And be honest, right? And to be, one of the things that we do is we have a hourglass in our office. And the hourglass is to remind us the most precious commodity is time. And so the poem goes something like this, and I'll paraphrase it. It's, what a tragedy that man had to invent the watch, but it had to be invented to drown out the macabre noise of grass growing over our graves. For the watch had to replace the hourglass. For the hourglass is a picture-perfect indication of each grain of sand, the limited amount of time that we have on this planet. But for the watch, it was just an illusion, and it's just an illusion, and we bought into it. And so we reestablished truth and what's true in the mirror. Hey, you're on the clock. What do you want to do, right? And I tell people when they come into our office, this is the great line when they come into my wealth manager, you're going to die, Ricky.
100%.
So now this is the question. We know that, and I'm going to phone call. I'm going to scratch your name off the file. I'm going to put your wife's name or your kid's name on the file. That's how it's going to happen. So the question is, what do you want to happen between now and when that day happens? Let's go do that.
You know, I think that's the one thing that people are scared of, right? They don't think about that. And I think even before that, I think one of the things is people are really not in tune with money, you know, and how they go about making money. You know, I think I see so many people struggling every single day at work and putting so much stress on themselves. And I think we talked about this last time. You know, in my team, when I have people that come from professional worlds, right? They made $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 out there. Now they're working for themselves. And now they're struggling because they're trying to make that $100,000 income without the skill set, right? And so as they continue to fail to hit the numbers to get there, their just whole world crumbles and they end up going back. I'm sure you see them all the time, right? One of the things I tell them, there's three levels of money in my mind, and that's the first level, what you need to make, what you want to make. Then I say, oh my God, right? That's what you hope will happen to you, right? And the one thing that, how would you help somebody learn, you know, what they need to make, you know, so that they go out and can, I mean, because what they need to make may only be $40,000 because they don't have a lot of bills. Maybe they won't get they won't be able to put 401k, do all the adventures, all the entertainment, but it will make their family, you know, live okay.
Right.
And once they hit that, they can go to what they want, which is replace the 100,000, right? And as they build, do you ever deal with people like that?
That's all I deal with. This is a lie. Success or money is not a measure of success. It is not. Now we've been told it is, right? Because that's how we, in our own mind, and the world tells us. And it's one of those falsehoods that is presented. Now, I know a lot of people who are multimillionaires who are miserable, right? And I know a lot of people who are living, you know, paycheck to paycheck, sure, but they're happy. They're And so it's this idea, people who come to me are successful in what they've done. So that, you know, my minimum is $1 million. So you got to come to me, you have some money. And so they spent their life grinding themselves into some form of success or whatever that case would be, a business owner or whatever. And they're like, okay, now what? Because my purpose is to be building this wealth, but how much is enough? And so there's an insatiable greed associated with it. So the first thing I tell them is contentment brings freedom. Freedom brings clarity of decision. So if you're content, not complacent, I didn't say complacent. Now, I'm not trying to take people's purpose of making money away from them. What I'm trying to say is that the contentment, the idea that I'm content. So my wife and I, we decided this is how much money we're going to live on. Now I can make a lot more, but this is what we're going to live on. And I'm okay with it. And now I'm going to eat ribeyes for the rest of my life. I'm blessed. God, you know, it's not a bad budget. It's a good, but everything above that, I still have the energy to make the money, but I'm going to give that away. And so that purpose is that idea that it's something bigger than myself. Self-satisfaction is it's a hole, and I've seen it for 30 years, right? I know the thing, right? And so for me, wealth management is about aligning people with something greater than themselves. And so when people are in the mindset of trying to build their wealth, they have to be content with the idea, okay, this is where I'm at. So if I want to change, how do I get there? What are the behaviors that I need to do that? Knowing that I'm okay. Because it's almost like people self-implode. They self-collapse. And they don't know how to dig themselves out of it. Owning the position is the first step of recovery. Owning the position, saying this is who, and people get lied to by their friends or the TV or society, right. And you say, no, this is my position. Now, owning it didn't mean you have to stay there, and then building a plan to something better with purpose, not with some metric that society's deciding that that's what it needs.
That's pretty tough. Guys, we'll be right back with Rick, and we're going to talk a little bit more of his journey and his wealth management plan. Talk to you in a minute. If you're loving what you're watching, don't miss a moment of Battle Ready or any of your other Now Media favorites, TV shows, either live or on demand, anytime, anywhere. You can download the free on Now Media TV on Roku or iOS and enjoy nonstop, round-the-clock shows. Or if you're on the go, you can actually download and podcast on www.nowmedia.tv and watch any of us and listen to on any of the podcasts. You get an opportunity to listen, give me some feedback, let us know what we can do better. I thank you a lot. Now listen, guys, we're back with Rick Figueroa. You know, we had an amazing conversation at the break. I kind of liked it. So, you know, you said something that I wanted to check on. You said that your firm only talks to people at a million, and I wanted you to quantify that. What did you mean by that?
So when we built this firm in 2000, October 2nd, 2000, we launched, right? I left UBS, came here, and I wanted to do something there. So I had three rules. They're simple, right? My mother has seven. I'm not that smart. I went to three,
right? Gotcha.
With the firm, it's three. Number one, right? Everybody's blessed. I want to know that everybody who comes to us is blessed. Now, everybody needs to understand what it takes to be successful financially. So if you have $5,000, we might not be able to help you, but we'll point you in the right direction. And I've instructed my staff to look for those opportunities, right? To seek those opportunities, to be able to build a program or a plan for somebody who would never be able to speak to me, right? So everybody's blessed, and we try to leverage that as much as possible. And that's important because I don't want to forget, never ever do I ever want to forget that people are not numbers, right? And so we've tried to help, and we institute a policy where we're saying, look, we might not be able to help you here at Patreon Wealth Management, but we're going to show you where you can go, and you can build a program, and you can save money and start building. And maybe you'll come back to us and say, hey, you know what? Because I followed your program, I've got the money, and now I'm building this out. Or just the basic financials, right? Number two, if you come here, you have to be ministry-driven. And this is the difference, not vocational. There are a lot of people who are looking for a job. And you come here, I need a job. Don't come work for me. You come here because you're called, because in your bones, every day you get up and you love to talk to people and to impact lives. You want to be, and the vulnerability that people are with us, you have to be ministerial by nature, because it's you've given permission to navigate deep waters with people. And you can't do that and feel transactional. You got to feel connected. You got to have it's got to be something that's so embedded in you. So people who come work for me need to own that position. They need to own the responsibility of that. They need to own the core competency of what it takes to be successful in doing it, because you can't just do it flippantly. You have to be intentional about it. So the wealth management's important. And the third one is this, and this is my most important. I want to turn wealth management on its butt. And this is how I'm going to do it. So I told you that our bonuses are geared for wealth managers. You know, typically you go to you see a Merrill Lynch commercial, say, I was there when your daughter was born, I was there when she got married and she had a college and she had her own baby. Now that guy, you know, we're Merrill Lynch, we love you, whatever financial. But when that guy goes back to his office, he's only graded on assets under management and production. So how do you reconcile a commercial that talks about the soft tissues, and then when he goes back to his office, he's graded on hard numbers, right? So when we built this firm, we said, okay, look, if you're going to get a bonus, you know, $10,000 bonus, a third of your bonus will be on what you produce, which is numbers. It's important. A third of your bonus will be based on your teamwork and how you work with it well, you work with others. And a third of your bonus will be based on impact. And that impact doesn't have to be with clients. It can be with anybody. And so one of our guys bought donuts for a security guard, and he got a video of him eating these donuts. And he goes, it was such a great thing because the security guard would never be our client. But it was just a great opportunity for us. The other part of this thing is that we want to speak truth to power. And so it's important that we tell people that your goal isn't to bring us more money. Your goal is to use that money to make impact, right? To give that money away. And I'll give you one example that was tremendous. I had a guy come to me one time. He goes, all right, Rick, I've talked to you. I want to give $2.5 million away to my church when I die. And I looked at him, and he goes, what? I go, huh. He goes, you don't think much of $2.5 million? I said, no, it's nothing. He goes, you don't think $2.5 million is a lot of money? I said, Bill, you're dead. What's $2.5 million worth to a dead man? Nothing. I said, the whole point of a gift is that it costs you something. A gift that doesn't cost you, and it isn't a gift. It's nothing, right? It's like me giving you my shoes when I'm done with them. And so he got mad at me. He goes, well, fine. Show me how to give $2.5 million away when I'm alive. And I said, now you're putting me to work. Now I'm becoming your wealth advisor. And, you know, that is, and so the difference is he got to see the impact, guard the impact and protect the impact and make it as surgical as opposed to trying to do it from the grave. And so that idea was sold to him that giving money away when you're dead was honorable, which again, plan, do your state and all that. But if you have enough, let's give it away when you're alive. Now that's counterintuitive to me because I get paid on assets under management. So I'm telling my clients, give the money away and I get less money. But it's also honorable because it gives them purpose. That money sitting in my account has no purpose. It's growing, it's doing well, but if you have enough, let's give it away and let's leverage it. And so one of the other things also, Ricky, and I was going along, but we're now doing proposals and proxies. So we vote proxies on behalf of our clients. And this is important. Typically wealth managers have stocks, and then you'll get a proxy notice from a company like Facebook or Starbucks or Meta or Disney, and everybody throws it away. What we said is no, we're going to vote your principles and values in that stock. So we're also going to write proposals, and I'll give you two examples that were tremendous. We had one where Starbucks was matching gifts for LGBTQ and Black Lives Matter. So if you worked there, if you donated $100 to those two organizations, they would match it. But if you want to donate money to your church, your synagogue, or your temple, they wouldn't do it. Wow. And you're like, well, wait a minute, that's discrimination. So we wrote a proposal to Starbucks saying, hey, we're shareholders. We're going to basically say this is discrimination, right? And so the general counsel and the investor relations contacted us and said, hey, why are you doing this? And we explained it to them. They go, well, no, we don't do that. We match everybody. They go, no, you don't. So we took them to their own website, showed them on their own website where they do it. The screen went black for a few seconds, and it came back up, and they go, if we change our policy, will you withdraw your proposal? And we said, we'll throw you a party. A $2,500 position in Starbucks changed a multi-billion dollar company. Now that client is using their resources to change things from what they believe to outside. We did the same thing for Disney and Meta. Meta was offering pornography and sex trafficking sites and on Facebook for people who are under the age of 14. And we said, that's wrong. And we said that we don't believe that policy is correct, right? And so, it's the ability for you as a client, however much money you have, to be able to take your responsibility, your gift, God-given gift, stewardship, and bring it back out and affect change, not just let it sit there in the account and grow, and leverage it at every capacity. It's exciting.
You know what? I almost hate to do this right now. I'm going to have to give my wife some love. I can't even believe I'm going to do this. Because you said something that just, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, I had a conversation with my wife in regards to my kids. And you're talking about this guy that wants to give $2.5 million after he dies. And me, I just wanted to, I'm like, why are you giving the kids money? They can have it when we die. And my wife literally said this to me. She said, I want to give it to him now so I can see him enjoy it.
It So let me tell you this.
That was like wild.
Well, no, let me give you this. So I learned this. I stole this from a client, right? So he basically challenged each of his kids to give money away. I know I got a few minutes, but this is a great story. So at Christmas, my kids were 12, 11, I think 8 and 6. And I said, all right, guys, I'm going to each give you $1,000. And they're excited to give away. And they go, really? You got to present a charity of your choice. You get to present to your
really?
Mother or not. And then I said, I'm going to give you a fifth thousand. There's four kids. I'm going to give you a fifth. But that fifth thousand, all of you have to agree on that one charity. And if you don't agree, if one of you don't agree, all the $5,000 money is gone. And so you understand the rules? They go, yeah, Dad. So they went back. They came back within 2 weeks, and they did a presentation. And what my youngest wanted to give money to the church to build a jungle gym. I said, okay. And then my younger, older son decided he wanted to give money to Ecuador for Compassion International. My other daughter wanted to give it to Young Life. And then the other daughter wanted to give it to the food bank. And so the four of them, right? And I said, okay, all right, that sounds good. Now, what about the fifth? Well, my younger daughter and my younger son, the two alphas, they were saying, well, we want to give it to the Young Life. He goes, no, I want to give it to the playground. And I said, and they were arguing. I looked at him and said, it's over. And then my wife looked at me and she goes, what? I said, it's over. And I looked at him and said, let me explain something to you. The four of you couldn't agree on something, so therefore there will be no playground for your church. There'll be people in Ecuador who don't get to go to a Compassion International program. Young Life won't have their pizzas and won't have their things. And the food bank's not going to have, because you guys couldn't agree. When your family can't agree, there is pain and suffering that's beyond you guys. Now go away. And you thought, my wife looked at me like I was the devil. And she goes, what are you doing? I said, I want that to resonate. I want them to understand the power that they wield when they get money and the responsibility they have. And if they don't do it well, that other people suffer because of it. So I let it sit for about 2 weeks, Ricky. About 2 weeks later, I said, all right, look, your mother's on me about this. I'm going to give you another shot. They go, what? And I said, we're going to give you another shot. You know the rules, right? Yes, we know the rules. All right. They came back to me 2 weeks later. They presented. And the first thing is said, Dad, they all lined up, right? Dad, we'd like to talk about the $5,000 first. I'm like, are you sure? He goes, yes. And I said, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to give it to the playground at the church. And I go, really? Yep. And they all standing there. I said, and I looked at my daughter. I said, well, what about Young Life? I said, didn't Young Life need the money? I said, you know, Young Life's pretty important. You should probably give money to Young Life. And she looked at me. She goes, Dad, stop it. We're not going to argue. We're united, and you're not going to get between us. This is what we're going to do, Dad.
Nice.
Now, I could have taught my kids until the cows come home about that. But they felt it. They felt it. And so when you have the ability to give money away while you're alive, you have the ability to educate and impact and guard these people and guide them, right? And so those kids need that guidance, not from the grave. They need it while you're alive.
Right.
Give, empower them.
Well, so how can somebody out there that wanted to have a conversation with you and your team, how do they get a hold of you?
We'll have some information local. My point guy is David Freed. He's my BD guy, and he'll have some information. We'll give it to you for sure. Listen, you know, our ministry is never going to, and I say ministry because it's not a business. To me, it's a ministry because the greatest ministerial field is people who have been blessed and don't know what to do with it.
Is this your website?
That's the website. And so they can contact us and let me know, and we'll reach out and try to set up. And look, this isn't about money. This is about impact. And you'd be surprised how impactful you can be if you just focus, no matter how the dollar amount matters. So we'll try to help everybody. Not everybody can be a client, but we'll point you in the right direction. We'll make sure you get the right information to build your wealth out and to do the right things. It's a discipline. And whether you have $10 or $10 million, the disciplines don't change. They don't change.
We'll talk a little bit more about the disciplines when we come back right after this word. Hey, welcome back to Battle Ready. You know, leadership just isn't about business. It's about service. And one of the great things about the conversation I'm having with Rick today is just about how he serves and how his organization serves everybody. And we were talking during the break, I made this joke about, I have a guy. And I mean, at a much higher level, but everybody you talk to, you have somebody that can help them, right?
We typically do. There's few problems that we can't, you know,
direct
solve,
somebody.
Right? And I always tell people, and I tell this to my kids, every problem has a solution. You might not like it. And a lot of times you don't like it, but it's a solution, right? And so people get overwhelmed, I think, by a lot of what the world has in front of them. And to have somebody be able to say, okay, look, we got, this is the problem. Let's solve the problem. Let's work the problem. You know, let's not get emotional about it. Work the problem. And so they get caught up in the idea of what the problem is versus, okay, let's just unpack it layer by layer. And so the blessing that I've had is I be able to sit on the hospital board, and I'm able to work for the state and over licensing regulation. You know, I've been in politics for a while. I mean, I have a wealth management firm. I understand about parenting. I understand about children. So I've had a lot of life experiences. I had a lot of arrows in my quiver that life has given me. And so those arrows, I can help fire them and when needed to help people, right? I mean, and so I had a person who called me today and needed help in getting their son in a tear. He was in an accident. He needed rehab. So to be able to, but that's not, to me, it's not about, you know, the Rolodex. It's about, you know, blessing people with the relationship of impact and being able to help them solve the problem. Because just to breathe, most people don't know how to breathe through a problem. They get consumed by it. And the world promotes that. It's almost like you're attacked either through the TV, through the social media, through everything. This civil unrest that's in the world seems to be this white noise that you can't hear yourself. And so to have somebody say, hey, let's take a breath. Tranquilo, right?
Right.
And let's work the problem.
And I think I remember in our last meeting, you talked about just the journey, you know, coming from the barrio and from the way of life you had and the bumps and bruises as you made yourself go to where you're at now. You really understand that. So when people are out there watching the show, they should know that, you know, doesn't matter where you're at today, right? There is a place where you can end up.
Absolutely. You know, my mother raised 8 of us, and, you know, people always talked about, you know, you never had a dad. I said, well, I never missed what I didn't have, and that was a lie. When you don't have a dad, you miss. You know, I never had somebody teach me how to throw a baseball, fix an engine, or network, or show me how to do a business deal. And my mother was just struggling to keep us all there, right? So, but it wasn't an indictment on my mom. It was just a situational acknowledgement that this is the challenge, right? To own this, I had to own that challenge and then be able to adapt. I needed to find mentors, men who were able to mentor me, who weren't my dad, and learn from them. Now, I didn't know that. Sometimes I learn bad habits and good habits, but the situational awareness was, hey, I need to adapt and overcome this. And sometimes you get locked into the position of poor me, or I didn't have, when, okay, you didn't have it, so where are you gonna find it? And where are you gonna solve it? And so that position has given me a lot of networks and built me a lot of networks. And the journey has been tremendous. The gift, there's a story, I don't know if I told you this, there's a story about a little boy in a little village, and he's very poor. And so his teacher, he loved his teacher, and she was having a birthday, so he wanted to bring her a present. So, you know, for a day came for her birthday, and they had flowers and fruit and everything else. And then the little boy brought a bag, and he put it on top of her desk at the very end of the day. And she opened it up, and it was a vial of sand from this little beach that was a 3-day walk. And so she looked at him. She goes, well, sweetheart, that's wonderful. You didn't have to get me the sand. And the little boy looks at the teacher confused and goes, the sand's not the gift. The journey was the gift. The walk was the gift. And I think that God gives us, we get consumed with the idea of creating some sort of tangible asset when it's the journey. I look at my challenges of the body as a blessing. I ran away from it when I was young thinking it was horrible, but it taught me how to survive and how to thrive in difficult situations. And so it ended up being a blessing for me. So, the journey, I think we need to appreciate that.
And I think the other piece of it, as you've told me, is the fact being that you've had this journey, that's helped you in designing your organization now, which allows you guys to be different. How are you guys different from other wealth management?
Well, we talked about compensation, how we compensate them. We talked about we don't push a product. We work just for you. We're not looking to have you buy our funds or to buy our you hire us to work for you. We're your eyes and ears. But I think the most strategic thing is, right, to be people aware that there's a stewardship. You don't really own it. You only rent it. And that's a shocking thing. My son learned that. He was, youngest son wants to take over the ranch. I have a ranch in Brenham. So he wants to take it over, and he's telling me all the things he's gonna do when he takes over, right?
Okay.
How he's gonna run the ranch better than me, right? And so I said, all right, well, you know what? Go do a plan. Go give me a plan, and we'll talk about it. So he gives me a plan, and he gives me the budget about the cattle and this and that. He's gonna improve fences and everything. And I looked at him and said, hey, you don't have property taxes on here. as one of your costs. He goes, what is that? I said, well, it's a tax. He goes, well, we're not buying the ranch, Dad. We've already bought it. I said, no. It's a tax to own it. He goes, you mean they charge me that tax every day? Every year? I go, yeah, every year you have to pay this tax. And he goes, well, then I don't own the ranch. And I go, exactly. He goes, well, that's just horrible. He goes, the government owns it. I said, well, kind of, but son, it's a lie that you do own the ranch. Because the time on you, I'm going to have some time on this earth, and God willing, you'll have your time. And you're only renting it for the time we have it, and it's going to go on to somebody else. And so that type of awareness is important.
So with that journey and all the other things that you're doing, how do you have time for just yourself?
That's been an Achilles heel for me for a while, Ricky. Mm-hmm. I've had to walk this little journey the last 5 years as the firm's been alive and working. One of the things that we did a team meeting, and one of the things we talked about was, what's the biggest threat to our firm? And I said, markets or whatever. My team said my schedule.
Your schedule.
Overcommitted.
Okay.
I'm doing too much. And so I had to be strategic about hiring people to take over and to own certain processes, right? And it's when you're a self-directed guy, your limitation is this, but if you can direct others with a philosophy, you exponentially build. So I've had to really, the last 5 years, learn that and decouple myself from the situation.
That's always a hard piece.
It's a whole, man.
Letting go?
Exactly, because it's anything else, right? It's, okay, I can show you how to build this fence. You know what? By the time I show you, I could have had it built already.
You
gotta say, wait a minute, there's gonna be 20 more fences. So if I show you this time, then I can leverage my time for the next time at the, same thing.
No, I definitely get it. I always bring my wife up because my wife and I are like night and day. And I'm more of I have no problem sharing, helping people learn what I do and direct them to do it. My wife does it. She thinks like that, like you just said, by the time I teach them, I can just get it done. It's over with. And then she, like you, she works from 7 to 7 dealing with everybody. And then she gets home to do her work that she's supposed to done during the 7 to 7. And then there's nights where I get up and she's still working. Mm. And then she gets up, takes a shower, and goes to work. And that's not healthy. So no. You definitely gotta, I think I told you this the other time, I think I've said this to you before, very few people on their dying beds wish they had spent more time at work, right?
No, they don't.
And it's hard, it's easy to listen to, but hard to deal with.
Because we're told this lie. So I'm saying it's falsehood, right, about time, right? It's this illusion of perpetuity. There's no perpetuity, right? And the realization of that is an important factor in order to order your life. How many Saturdays do you have left?
Right.
I've got more days behind me than I do in front of me. I remind myself not to be depressed, but to be intentional. And I'm intentional about each time as a gift and to honor that time because you can't replace it. I speak at the A&M campus every year twice on ethics. The first thing I tell these kids, right, is that you're richer than Bill Gates and Elon Musk because you have more time, statistically speaking, than they do, right? That's one thing they can't buy. As much as billions of dollars, they can't buy time. They're trying, but they can't do it. And so the ability for you to be able to leverage that knowledge that I do have this resource and it is, I can't sell it, so I got to use it every day.
So the important thing is to not only manage your time, but fill your time with stuff that helps you help others?
Exactly, yeah. Stop watching videos on your phone. Be intentional about what you're doing. Listen to podcasts with intentionality to learn, to grow, to be better. Don't be divisive. Don't waste time with noise. Be intentional about what you're doing, how you're doing it, and making sure that the impact that you are doing is for good, because you can make a negative impact. A lot of people don't realize that impact can go both ways.
I was thinking about what you said, being intentional about your time. I know one of the things I did this year, starting at the beginning of the year, I was like, I read and I see all these articles about all these guys making the millions of dollars, and they read a lot of books every year, to help them get better and listen and see other people's ways of doing stuff. So I sat down and I'm like, man, I don't know if I can overindulge myself. So I got on with ChatGPT and I said, listen, I need to come up with some books. Give me a list of books that I should read this year, right? And so I have 22 books. The 22 books have to do with motivation, with drive. The one I just finished was Atomic Habits. And that was something else. But I think that was very powerful to be very pointed on your time.
You know, it's funny, and I might bust your bubble on this.
Come on.
Don't yell at me here.
No, come on.
Or don't swing at me.
No.
All those books, they're all thieves. They all stole it from the Bible.
Okay.
You read Proverbs and all that. Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Covey, he stole those from them. Every one of those seven habits have been biblically true. They were true thousands of years ago. They're true today. That's what truth does. It doesn't transcend. It transcends time. It's not a cultural shift. It's true today as it was. My mother's seven rules were true thousands of years ago, and they're going to be true within 1,000 years. And so those books are just reinventing, repackaging truth. So the greatest book, now read all the books you want, but the greatest one I've ever read is the Bible.
You know what? We're going to come right back and talk about that. That's actually amazing thoughts. We'll be right back with Rick. Hey guys, welcome back. If you love what you're watching, don't miss a moment of Battle Ready or any of your favorite Now Media TV shows. You can download them or on demand, anytime, anywhere. You can download them free on Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS. And you can enjoy instant access to a full array of shows, both bilingual, English and Spanish. If you prefer to listen on the go, you can catch the podcast version and you can download it at nowmedia.tv on the website. And be able to bring with us every day and give us some feedback. The last section today with Rick over here, talking a little about his organization, the CEO of Padron Partners, and it's a wealth company. Rick, I appreciate you coming to visit me today.
Honored to be here.
You know, we've had some pretty good roller coasters. You tried to throw a little uppercut on me earlier. I think I worked with it, you know, in regards to my reading, and you came in with everything comes from the Bible.
So you talk about books, and I didn't mean to get left hooky there, but
it's okay, man. My cheek's okay.
So in my experiences, right, I've been in business for a while. I've seen things, right?
Sure.
People, you know, talk about, you know, what can I do to help myself, right? And we talk about self-help books, and there's billions of dollars.
Sure.
Whether it's Covey or this or that or Tony Robbins and all these guys trying, what they're trying to do is make you a self-improvement program. They're trying to change your habits. It's your heart, right? The heart is, you get a heart transformation, everything else falls in, right? My habits can change for a while. And so when you read scripture, when you read the Bible, you have to understand what it's doing. It's a love letter from Genesis to Revelation. And people don't get this, right? It's 66 books, right? Written in three different languages, right? And you're thinking about over 1,500 years, right? And it's all the same story. You and I can't write a book together right now and have the same story. So it transcended a lot of knowledge, right? And if you read it, it's basically God reconciling a lost world to him. That's it. From Genesis, the fall of man, to when Christ comes back, that is the process. And it's highlighting how that works and why it's so important for you to understand. And when people look at it, they try to read it in little, let me start with the book of John, or let me start with Revelations. And they put themselves, so they make two big mistakes. They put themselves in the Bible and they say, hey, you know, I'm like David or I'm like Paul or Peter. No, there was a Paul, there was a Peter. They existed and they've been validated by archaeology and everything else, but you're not him or you're not them. You are who you are, own the position you are. The second thing is they look at it as some various stories when it's one big theme. And I always tell people, people talk about, I want to be in the will of God, right? I want to be in the will of God. And like, his will is simple. He's reconciling a lost world to him. That's it. And his process has not changed over the beginning of time. And so that, when you lean into that effort, when you pour into that, you become aware of that and you don't get confused, right? The stewardship, that clock, that's just an awareness of truth, right? And then there's an accountability of that. So when I tell people you are steward of your money, it's because you've been given it, right? One of the biggest fallacies, I went to San Diego to give a speech with my two boys. And my oldest boy, he's one of my intellectuals. We saw this sculpture of a man that was being cut out of marble. Half his body was marble, a slab of marble. And he was chiseling himself out of there. This big old hulking guy, kind of like me, big muscle guy.
Right?
And so the big old guy and he's chiseling. And so we looked at it and it said to all the self-made man, of Balboa Beach, right? And, you know, all the self-made, where it was honoring the self. And my son looked at it and he started laughing. He goes, and I go, what? He goes, well, who made the first chisel? Who made the first chisel? He saw it at 8. And I'm like, it's a lie. Self-made, man. You didn't wake up this morning without permission. You didn't get up this morning. What you did with it, now that's your choice, but you didn't wait. And so the intentionality of understanding your position is such a big point, right? I told you, point of reference, knowing, owning your role. So people want to ignore, is there a God? Honest question, is there a God? And if he is, what does he want? And most people won't answer that question because if they ask that question, the consequences of that question being answered with complete faith just drives your behavior beyond what you could ever imagine, right? And so let me just avoid the question. Let me just ignore it, placate it, push it aside. And I'm like, no. So when I go back to, I get lost in this whole thing and I get lost in the noise of life. I have to go back to what I know, which is biblical, right? And that's the, and so I love the books. I read into a lot of great books with a lot of strategies, Who Moved My Cheese, all these great ideas, sure. right? But let me make something to think about. They're all thieves from scripture. Proverbs. You want to read some great advice, go to Proverbs.
And so you take what you've learned in those readings and you apply it in your company.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's how you work with people like myself who have questions about, all right, what do I do with my money? How do I grow my money? How do I don't know. How do I do something? What's the value of investing?
Right.
You help them answer those
questions.
Absolutely.
One of the great stories is the stories of the talents. You know, Jesus told a story about the God gave 5 talents to each servant, right? And one guy, you know, he doubled it. One guy, you know, did 20%, the other guy did, he buried it. And he got mad if the guy buried his talents because he was like, why did you bury him? He goes, well, I was scared. God was like, no, you're supposed to use what you're given, multiply, leverage. We're made to grow our wealth. We're made to grow. We're not made to be poor. We're made, but it's, that wealth is not to honor you. It's to honor him, and it's a good steward. And it's not to just pour, because I've seen people who grow wealth to honor them, and it's a self-imploding process. And they just, it becomes incestual. And they wake up going, man, I'm really not satisfied. I got all the money in the world, but I'm not satisfied.
So what does value-based investing actually mean in practice?
It means your values, your principles. What do you believe, right? What do you love? Some of the questions we ask is, what do you love? What do you hate, right? Those are great questions. People, they think that I'm going to give money to an advisor. He's going to go make me money. But for what? Why am I making money? For what end? To build my revenue? To build my own production, right? That's what most, for me, I'm going, what do you want? What do you feel like you're called to do? What are the, and people who are successful, they pour themselves into the success of their company, right? And they go, well, I don't want to sell my company. I go, well why not? He goes, because I don't know what I'm going to do. Well, then I'm like, well, then you don't own the company. The company owns you.
Oh, wow.
Right? Right? That should never be the case, but they don't know. Their world has been consumed by this company, which is paid well, but for what end? For what means? Right? And to have something that is outside themselves and to build something that's better and bigger, right? And to pour into that's going to transcend their own life is everything, right? And so people don't, and so for me, values is that I awaken the core conscience of a person. And I don't do it by telling them. My job is never to tell them. My job is to hold that mirror. Remember that mirror?
Right.
Ricky, you don't like what's in the mirror. It ain't my fault. Right. Lose weight. Go work out more, right?
Right, sure.
Go. I'm just holding the mirror. Now, if you don't like what I have to say, okay, fine. Go find a mirror that maybe you agree with. But typically, the true value of what we do is to tell people things they don't want to hear, but they need to. Ultimately, that's what they pay us for.
And then you show them how to fix that?
Absolutely. Or to own it and to address it and to build on, right? People don't need to be fixed. They need to be awakened. And I think that's important. I'm not trying to tell you, all right, you need to do this. What I'm saying is, what do you want? And then we're going to walk with you through that. My job isn't to coach you into a position. My job is to walk with you. And so because people need some sort of person to hold them accountable, right? As you know, that's a huge part. Sure. But also to pick them up when they fall and to pull them down when they get a little ahead of themselves.
So what responsibility do investors have beyond profit?
They have responsibility to use that some service. Right? Now, typically most people say, well, I want to feed my family. When I ask people what their values or principles are, first thing they say is, well, I want to make sure my wife has money in case I die, and then I want my kids to make, and then my grandkids. That's not principled advice. Common freaking sense. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
What,
sure.
What do you call to do? I have inner city passion. Why? Because I know those kids, right? I know who they are, so I have that passion. I don't know what your passion is, but I feel like the money I make, beyond a certain contentment, right? I mean, contentment breeds freedom. Freedom brings clarity of decision. You can't buy me. I'm okay with walking away from you. I don't need to close the deal, right? Because I'm content. I'm ambitious. I don't want to be complacent. And so to build that out to serve and to, I want to pour into other kids. I want to pour into kids who never had a shot, right? That's my passion.
So how does somebody reach out and get a hold of you if they want to continue this conversation?
They have to go to the website and do our website that they put on. Love to have him there. Legacy, faith, family, and legacy is important, right? We talk about those things. But those three things are core attributes of a belief, right? Faith, what do you believe to be true? And people ignore that. Family. If you don't have a family, pick one. There are families, there are kids who don't have a dad or a mom that needs somebody. There's homeless people, right? Mm-hmm. And the legacy is thinking beyond the time on your earth, right? What is it going to happen beyond this? When we're done, what's going to happen? And what impact am I going to leave? The last thing I'll tell you real quick is, the one thing I know that's going to be in heaven, and scripture tells us, is other people. I believe the currency of heaven is going to be relationships.
Okay. So I'll tell you this, you know, it's been amazing as usual to sit down and talk with you. And I love your mindset. I told you this earlier in a break, you know, it's have a lot of respect for what you do and the things that you continue to. And tell me about, you know, we mentioned last time about what you do for the kids out at your ranch.
So we bring every year, every fall, we bring the kids, Youth for Christ, great organization, and Young Life. But Youth for Christ is these are incarcerated kids. They come out to the ranch, and this is the funny part. I get my clients, millionaires. They come out, and their job is to love on these kids. If they want a Coke, go get them a Coke. They want a burger, go get them a burger. They want a hot dog, they throw trash, pick it up for them. They want to play horseshoes. And these kids, they come out to the ranch, they've never seen outside of their 4-block radius of their hood, right, or the barrio. And they see the beauty of it, right, what we have and the opportunity, right, and they go fishing. I've had two kids who are in gangs who are fishing, and they never had a dad taking fishing. And so you're like, wow, and I have these guys who are multimillionaires who would probably walk on the other side of the street of this kid if they're walking down, sitting there. Now, I've told him, this isn't your father. He's not going to replace you. He's not going to adopt you. But for one day, you'll see God's love. For one day, you'll see outside your body, your 8-block radius, and you'll see that the world is bigger than what you think it is. And it awakens them to something that is meaningful, and they can say, okay, they can cling to something, and they know it's out there.
So, you know, I know it's Padron Partners. I think it's kind of a, you level up. So now you're talking about the kids that they have no wealth, but you're still helping them. Oh. And then the next level of people that don't know what they don't know. So you're available. They just need to reach out and you will give them some direction. And hopefully the direction will bring them back to you if it doesn't work, but you're out there for you. So you're taking every different level step and helping the public. That's pretty amazing.
You know, I told you I teach at A&M, right? And I tell the class that my job isn't to convince you to do something. It's my job. My job is not to sell you something. My job is to make sure you can't claim ignorance.
Well, you know, Rick, as usual, it's been an amazing pleasure talking to you again, having you on our show. Guys, be yourself and be battle ready. Thanks for coming and hanging out with us today.